Chloe.
Welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world
get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, we love seeing you live every Thursday night in Facebook and YouTube land. Well, we can't get to every chat. They're always fun. But remember, your chats may show up in the show. So check yourself. And if you can't catch us live, always go back and catch the replay or listen to us on your favorite podcasting app. You know me, John Ruark, past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. Where is it? There we go. Right there. All right. Next up, Jason Richards. Good evening. Hi and hello.
Hello. Good evening. My name is Jason Richards, and I'm past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Joe Martinez, how you
better doing? To be had than viewed.
I want to be had.
Better be had?
Yeah.
That's tasty. What I said.
I'm ready for the weekend. Yeah, Joe Martinez, past master, Manassas Lodge number 182 in Manassas, Virginia, member of Things and Stuff, and I'm on the side of the ancients, and we're going to talk about that.
Word up. And last but not least, full house tonight. Brother RJ, how you doing?
Pretty good. Robert Johnson here, past master and member of the Ancient Eternian Order, where I currently sit as Eternian Guard. And yeah, it's pretty wild. So thanks for coming on this episode of Masonic Roundtable.
Nice. Very cool. Awesome. Well, let's get into the usual. Want to give a special shout out to the patrons who support the show. You guys are awesome. Rock our socks. It's great. Some of the conversations I've had, you know, offline over the past week, we've had some new members join. And another benefit of joining the patrons is, yes, you can chat with RJ at 2 a.m. if you'd like. But It's kind of a safe space too, which is really fascinating that I've had guys private message us just kind of like, hey, here's what I'm thinking, you know, is this true? Can I get a second opinion on this? And so it's always good to have an attentive ear to help as well. So that's another little bonus of supporting the show, that you get an attentive ear for free.
Yeah, that's true.
Tarot card of the week. I thought you jerks were done.
I love it.
Nice. I was just going to say that if people do want to, you know, Patreon chat at 2 a.m, I probably am up. I was watching Is It Cake with that psycho Mikey until 3:30 in the morning because I couldn't stop. I kept waiting for him to go, is my arm cake? And then like cutting into his arm or something. But
wait till you get to season 3.
Yeah, that's why I am in season 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, psychotic.
Good show. We need to do Is It Green Beans? That's what we need to do.
Joe bites into a steak. I forgot we're in an alternate reality, which is the reality in which Joe, in this what if, what happens? Joe likes green beans.
Joe likes green beans in this reality. Absolutely. Love them. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
All right. Let's see. So in our tarot card of the week, we are actually using, what do we got here?
You're using an altar cloth that isn't centered on your camera.
I know. We're doing Mystic Mondays, a nice Art Deco-esque. There you go. Let me just fix that real quick.
How'd you find out about that deck, John?
That was a gift from one Jason Richards.
What?
I love Art Deco. I'm not a huge fan of Mystic Mondays, but I do like the Art Deco.
I'm with you there.
I find... there's another really good Art Deco deck that I'll share with the folks in the chat later.
All right. So for today, we've got 9 of Pentacles.
Oh.
For our beginning of our What If series. So 9 of Pentacles, what does that represent?
achievement.
$9
$9
Yeah, it's nine is close to completion, right? It's one where in the Rider-Waite system, there's a lot of reflection, of looking back at all your hard work, at all you've achieved. You know, being satisfied, a little bit of contentment.
So, yeah, you are reaping the rewards of, you know, what you've labored for.
Luxury, baby.
Speaking of, haven't seen a super chat in a hot minute. Yes.
Too bad we can't pronounce the name. It appears to be both Hebrew and
There's a lot Arabic there.
Script. It's Cyrillic.
Yeah. Is the card, did you draw it upright or no?
Yes, I drew these upright. It's weird because this deck, to me, it seems to be mostly an upright deck. I don't like the reverses on those.
Well, in a more new agey sense, you can look at that card, mm-hmm. right? Like you guys mentioned all these great things that kind of center around comforts, I guess, you know, abundance, luxury, self-sufficiency, mm-hmm. financial independence, all that good stuff. But even the reversal card of that is more just of a contemplative work on asking yourself things like, you know, your self-worth. Are you over investing in work? And your favorite, John, the ever present hustle.
Yes. Always gotta get those fat stacks.
Oh yeah.
I think one thing that's interesting with Mystic Mondays is Grace, who created the Mystic Mondays deck, she swaps out a lot of genders, and so it's predominantly a, you know, kind of feminine deck. But then you look at the Peacock and the Nine of Pentacles, and typically in Rider-Waite you see that as a woman with the Nine Correct. Of Pentacles. The Peacock has all of the plumage, which is how the males Correct. Attract their mates.
That is true.
That's what I do with my plumage.
Your plumage.
I mean, or you could just wipe better.
You mean your pubis? I mean, plumage.
Plumage. Hard L. Okay.
So, such a good show.
Tonight, we are going to, we thought about, we're going to go run right into it as if we're already in the alternate timeline, but we do know that the average intellect of the average human or the average American is a little low. So we didn't want to have people slice and dice and take us out of context. So we wanted to make sure.
Which they will do anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
I was going to say the average intellect of someone who binges social media.
That is true. We're starting an alternate reality series based off of the Marvel animated series of the What If, where we look at alternate timelines of our favorite superheroes. We are exploring, based off of user submission, the ideas
and
of
voting by our Patreon members.
That is true. Yes, we are going from our number four all the way up to number one. What were our favorite alternate timelines we wanted to explore. So tonight we're going to jump into an alternate timeline where our Masonic history may have been altered. Starting with our first one, which is, what if the ancients and moderns never united? And so to keep in character, to keep the sense of being sucked into this storyline, we're actually going to speak in present tense as if this
timeline
already exists.
Yes, we are. Everybody knows what if is.
And then, no. Okay. So we'll start.
I concur. Now. And let me tell you why.
Jason, explain to us how the ancients and moderns decided to split.
So we began as a premier Grand Lodge in England around 1717-ish, may have been 1721, may have been as late as 1724. We don't know. We'll probably never know. But the fact of the matter is the Premier Grand Lodge began really being catered by the aristocracy and the learned gentry, and really began straying from the older rituals and the old way of doing things. And so, you know, in 1751, we had this rival group to the Premier Grand Lodge of England, calling ourselves the Ancients. And
yes, we did.
We claim that the Premier Grand Lodge, or the Moderns, as we termed them, were actually producing innovations.
Whoa.
In masonry. And we, the Ancients, held true to the old ways. You know, we believe that the Moderns were making innovations in the rituals and making unauthorized changes to
the ceremony. I said I wouldn't do this. I said I wasn't going to get into this, you know? We're bringing up something that is a hotly contested issue, the way these two things
all the way back today.
You know, they started a class warfare. Okay, I'm in a Moderns lodge, and when I go there, I don't even go there anymore because it's just a bunch of doctors and lawyers, and they don't like, you know, measly data scientists like me who don't, you know, make six figures a year. So it started all the way back then.
Actually, I do have a record of what the following charges were leveled by the Ancients. Transpose the modes of
recognition. I was only on point 2 out of 5.
Well, I'm gonna run with
it. Apparently, I went too slow for y'all.
Yes, you're dragging it out. They transpose the modes of recognition between the first and second degrees, omitted prayers. They de-Christianize the ritual. Anderson's Constitutions of 1733 being proof. Ignored and neglected the saints' days. Got to have your saints' days. They omitted in some cases to prepare candidates in the customary way. They abbreviated the ritual. They ceased to recite the ancient charges at initiations. Introduced austerity into the ceremonies, in particular having no place for the sword in the initiation ceremony, except that the Tyler wore a sword. So Nick Johnson is not happy with that. And allowed the esoteric ceremony of at the installation of a master to fall into disuse. So there's just a few of the charges that were brought up.
Well, I mean, it only took what, a generation and a half for people to get annoyed. So, you know, there were people around, you know, at the formation of the Premier Grand Lodge. Remember, it started with four lodges in London, right? It wasn't like a worldwide phenomenon yet.
If a generation is said to be 40 years, it took fewer than one generation.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yep.
So. All right. So what are your other points, Jason?
There was a big, you know, getting back to Joe and RJ and the class warfare, there were inherent cultural differences between the Ancients and the Moderns. The Ancients being very popular among Irish Masons living in England. And they were seen as more working class and less aristocratic than the Moderns, as RJ mentioned, you know, Moderns being associated with the upper classes and the aristocracy. There is also a disagreement over Masonic governance and authority. You know, the Moderns Grand Lodge was seen as hierarchical and centralized, whereas the Ancients wanted more of a decentralized approach to Masonic governance. You know, that split has, you know, continued again to this day.
Yeah. And so
just for the viewers, right? Hands up if you're in an ancient lodge.
Ancient Reformed.
Yeah. So same. What's interesting is, you know, we're kind of just a good mix of gents who, you guys ever visited a Moderns lodge before? You got to fill out weird paperwork before you go in, or?
Yeah. Ritual's completely different.
It's wild, right?
Yeah.
Well, Sorry.
I was just going to say, Gary Neal mentioned in the chat talking about. He says, "Don't forget Baltimore." I don't even know what that is. People keep referencing things like the Golden Age of Fraternalism. That I don't even know what that is.
So that's a good point.
Yeah, I noticed that. Well, I think what some of the viewers may be confused with is a lot of the jurisdictional things that started happening in the colonies, right? So, or should have happened. But, you know, remember when people from England and Ireland and Scotland brought their masonry over here, like Virginia, right. Look at Virginia. Virginia had Irish lodges, had ancients lodges, had moderns lodges, and it had Scottish lodges as well. So all different kinds of flavors. So you could go in one town, you could have four different flavors of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And you still have that. So,
yeah. So colonial masonry, yeah, was already a scattering of different Grand Lodge. You know, it's basically a race to see who could charter the most lodges.
So no, that was literally how speculative masonry took over operative masonry in Scotland.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
Here's a charter. Here's a charter. Here's a charter. Here's a charter.
Right, doing on really old paper, so they look way older.
You guys, got any more of those lodge charters?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that you mentioned against the leveling of charges, the removal of sort of religious connotations within the lodges. And, you know, even since the beginning, you know, we've got things like, you know, Catholicism and Jacobite kind of revolutions that are happening that are kind of splitting different lodges, different ways, even back then. And that certainly just continued to affect the lodges that existed. And, you know, like today, now in every state, we have some semblance of a ancient Grand Lodge and a modern Grand Lodge. And they get along like the Odd Fellows do. And we're kind of not supposed to talk about secrets with the moderns.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the whole lack of visitation thing is weird, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody had I got a flash here. You know, somebody had sent something about this Baltimore convention. I asked, I said, "What does that mean?" And They're informing me that in an alternate timeline, I guess, there was a Baltimore convention with a guy named Rob Morris. You know, you look up the history in this timeline, and I'll just tell you, Rob Morris is nobody in masonry. Instead of trying to make money in masonry, he just continues to be kind of like a grifter in other areas of life. And he makes some kind of weird inventions, one of which was called the Snaggler, which is like a wooden fingertip that you put on your finger. And it's an extension that allows you to pick your nose without getting your hands dirty. And overall, he makes like $8, which is $324 today. He doesn't even make enough to cover the exotic woods that he used when he was manufacturing this thing, and subsequently sued for unpaid bills, dies almost penniless like a Nikola Tesla. And there's only one photograph hanging in the Smithsonian of him dying, clutching the one and only a prototype of this thing he called the Snaggler. So that's what happens to Rob Morris in this timeline.
Damn.
So we know there was the split in 1751, right? And then, you know, masonry still spreads out globally. Focusing on the colonies, again, there's so much diversification of not just ancient moderns, but also the Irish and Scottish lodges, right? That there is... There was no unification, right? That there was no common, there was no common ritual, there was no common thing. And
it was very much the way Scottish Freemasonry evolved.
Yeah.
In the 1700s. You know, even with the advent of the Grand Lodge of Scotland in 1736, the Grand Lodge allowed the lodges that were already in place to keep their own rituals. Very, very much kind of a similar hodgepodge here in the U.S.
Yeah, Brother Adam has a good question. You know, does each state have a Grand Ancients Lodge and a Moderns Grand Lodge?
It's not wood. They do.
Yeah.
They do.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, not unlike our Prince Hall brethren as well, right? That they have jurisdictional overlap.
That's a great point because of the connections between Prince Hall and, I believe, the Irish lodges. we actually saw a deeper connection because they stuck around much longer. And this contributed to a, you know, we started to see a huge problem with, you know, racial inequity in America in those beginning years. And because of the proliferation of various different types of lodges, you had several, I guess you could call them, you know, European, mostly white lodges that began accepting men of color much earlier because they were just there. And we didn't have a governing body who made sweeping decisions over everything. So it made a real difference. We
see, yeah, but Arthur, you're forgetting the explosion of all this extra non-UK type of Freemasonry that happened when the French came over. The French came over and just, it was like, hey, any kind of Freemasonry you want Freemasonry, you know, these kinds of people, those kinds of people. You want to change the requirements, like, and those exploded everywhere, you know, down from the Caribbean up through the south of the country. And so there's just any kind of Freemasonry you want to practice now, and you get to pick and choose, right?
Right. Which is, again, a good point about how these Grand Lodges got formed, right? Because there was almost a unification in 1813 that didn't happen. But up to that time frame, colonial masonry was still growing. We already had our concerns with England, right? With the Revolutionary War. The bifurcation of masonry didn't help, right? It didn't help unify a common brotherhood at that point. And so Grand Lodges were still getting formed, right? The Grand Lodge of Virginia being the first one. Again, still being assembled of brethren of a variety of different Grand Lodge charters.
Well, it's really, you know, it's really the Grand Lodges of Virginia, because you know, when you have this entire hodgepodge of masonry going on, like especially after the Revolutionary War, like the last thing that we wanted to do was to get into, you know, war with each other as far as Masonic jurisdictions went.
Yeah, but Jason, what about all the non-colony states? You got like Missouri and Nebraska and California. You know, people were kind of racing to get there first to see who's going to charter a Grand Lodge. You know what I mean? And then, so you did have sometimes altercations, I guess we could call them, to see who would come out on top. But now everything's been so homogenized. We're so used to Freemasonry and all its different flavors that you've got multiple Grand Lodges in each state. So, you know, it's... Yeah, but there was a little bit of bloodbath. You had the Utah stuff, and you know, that got wild. You know, and
it does.
Yeah.
Utah's always been wild.
Interesting place. You
know, half the state's still a territory, right? So,
yeah. Right. So, so again, there was a moment where they could have unified in 1813. They talked about having the moderns update their ritual to be more in line with the ancients, which were predominant at the time. But they decided at the last minute not to unify at that point. And that became kind of like the final divorce paper, where any chance of unification after that really was a lost cause.
Well, question for you. I know which I can't remember which Grand Lodge is it, that still claims, hereditary royal grandmastership. Is that the ancients or the moderns? Like, their honorary grandmaster is still a royal. Which one is that? Is that the moderns?
I believe it's the moderns.
Yeah, I believe the moderns were the older one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The ancients were the newer ones, but wanted to go back to...
Yeah, they kind of claimed that sort of monarchical system where there is that the, you know, first sort of grand master over the entire United States.
Now, I'm going to fast forward a little bit, and because we almost had a chance of unification and then started diverting, right? More and more states are getting formed. We're doing westward expansion, right? And it's now becoming not only the attitude of the political genre going on, the geopolitical arena of free states versus slave states here in America in the 1800s. But then also, are you an ancient, are you modern, or are you something else, right? So we're getting this big squishy ball, right? We're already splintered with the issue of slavery. Now we're also splintering our fraternity
along jurisdictional lines. The greatest semblance of anything that we see as a unification after that comes as a result of our Civil War, where
right.
You know, we have men in camps and POW camps who would form loose-knit lodges, both ancient and modern, within the camp. And then sometimes they kind of have no choice. So you have this kind of bastardization of the ritual that comes together. Mm-hmm. They sort of mix. And this is its own flavor of Masonry today, much like, see a mix of either French-Canadian or, down in the southern states, you've got, French-speaking Louisianans who, just as kind of mix that happens.
Yeah. So that this is all the history of why we have the melting pot of Freemasonry that we have today. Joe?
I could only imagine, though, if Freemasonry were a bit more unified, because remember, we would hear the stories of, moderns Masons on one side and ancients Masons on the other, on the battlefield and stuff. Like, if only they could agree to modes of recognition and stuff like that. I wonder how many more.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing acts of brotherhood would unfold. But now you got a dude, you don't even know his modes of recognition,
his lineage. Cool. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
You're getting a pellet in the head. So,
there's no chance of even fraternal, respect.
Right.
Across state lines. Mm-hmm.
Crazy. If only.
If only. Even now, I think we're closer to admitting women into regular ancient Freemasonry than we are to actually merging the ancients and the moderns.
That is true. Yeah, that's a lost cause for sure.
Yeah, I mean, as the ancients had continued to be, leveling these charges, got leveled on them, far in the past, we've kind of, I'll speak for ancient Masonry and say we're a much more progressive institution, keeping in line with that verbiage that we are a progressive moral science. We make those leaps and bounds in what we might call societal progress. Whereas moderns kind of just sit there, in my view.
Yeah, but see, and this is what I struggle with, being a Mason in my town, I've got moderns, ancients, I've got ancient and accepted right lodge over here, I've got a rectified right lodge over there, just all in my town. And here's the biggest problem I see is that, as someone who was, who's an ancients Mason, we meet at a moderns lodge building because they've got all the money and they've got tons of bling bling and history and gravitas, so we have to pay them rent just to meet once.
Well, that's because they're all centralized and their coffers run deep.
Yeah, right?
when you're federated and decentralized,
so it's kind of annoying,
to smaller you get scale
that, you have to go in and ask them to use their lodge and pay rent and all that. Mm-hmm. Stuff it's a weird vibe,
So again, after the Civil War, it only gives people more permission to then do these splintering of the Grand Lodge system as well. Because, as we have more than just ancients and moderns and Prince Hall. We have all these different styles. You could see, I'm a member of Ancients Reformed. RJ's a member of the Ancient. It's almost like, like every time there's a splintering of a church or a religious institution, right? That some group just disagrees on one thing and now they splinter off and form.
Don't right? get me started on the traditional ancient observance.
They just opened a non-denominational lodge down the street.
Really?
Yeah, it's super interesting. Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing just always weirds me out.
Very liturgical.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of guitar music going on there.
There really is. They love their 12 strings, and it's like if you're not playing a Martin, they just look at you weird. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Now, I'd also argue that this splintering and this lack of organization is part of the reason why Masons have an even lower perception today than they probably would have in the public sphere, right? Our membership numbers are extremely low because we never got, you know, this organized banner of a fraternal order that, you know, that stood for something, because we all had different opinions of what that stood for.
We all stand for different things.
Yeah. You
know? Leading up to those attempts at unification, both over in England and especially here in the States, we started to see a large increase of different sort of fraternal orders that all kind of wanted to be like us. And we didn't unify, and it caused all this schism and bad blood. And people, you know, the wives started saying things like, You guys are worse than, these soap opera books I'm reading, or these drama books I'm reading. Like, there's so much crazy things you guys are involved with. And the
Sun Card, that's Joe's favorite Masonic symbol, the Triskelion.
It is. We use it in the Fellowcrafts degree. Yeah, absolutely. Fun
on. He has it tattooed on his left butt cheek.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. True story.
Right. Yep. So, because we never really had a golden age of fraternalism, necessarily.
Well, we did, you know, you did have all those organizations that cropped up, but it pulled away from our membership. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yep. You know,
what's the membership in your state right now sitting, you know, as far as ancients go?
Ancients, on a really healthy day, I think we're at about 2000.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And we have a moderns, the two Grand Lodge buildings are literally across the street from each other. Right. And they stare at each other. So it's kind of weird.
We got about 2,200 ancient lodges across the state of Illinois, and not lodges, 2,200 members across the ancient spectrum in Illinois. There's only one modern lodge in what you might call Southern Illinois. And that's not even Southern. It's Springfield. And that's just because it's the capital. The rest of them are all in Chicago, where all the money is.
Now, do you have any cool, French style lodges, things like that?
There are a couple, like what we would call like the Scottish Rite third degree lodges that are operating, you know,
which we never talked about the Scottish craft lodges. Yeah, those are
they're booming.
Those are fun. They're expensive though.
They
look
are.
Yeah. They look pricey. Yeah.
So here's a question from Mike, the CEO. So which, if you remember, which ancients or moderns were in favor of states' rights?
Us.
I mean, at the end of the day, you have us, the ancients, being highly federated, and the moderns being much more
centralized
and hierarchical. So, you know, states' rights as a inherent concept,
constitutional concept.
Constitutional concept.
Not as
states' rights as an excuse for slavery. No.
Yeah. In fact, because of the ancients being a much more progressive institution, it was much, much more prevalent. I mean, we've got records going all the way back from people who, are being requested to fight for the southern states, but part of ancient lodges, and are subsequently hopping the border and fighting for the Union. Just based on sheer Masonic principle.
Right. Yeah. And we didn't, I would imagine if we were more centralized, there'd be an overarching Masonic political opinion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you go to five different lodges, you get five different groups of people that all have wildly different opinions. So.
Yeah. Because I think you bring up a good point too, Joe, about administration as well, right? Because imagine if there was only like one or two grand jurisdictions per state, right? It would be a lot of top down authority. There'd be a lot of like weird edicts and stuff being made by one guy at the top that we'd
probably
all have.
A lot of cronyism too, I would imagine.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Could you imagine like if you only had one shot at like, you know, a grand line and like your one guy didn't get in, then you have to wait like 7 or 8 years for the next guy to get it.
I've been a Mason for 19 years and I've been DDGM 7 times, you know, because
sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. RJ was Worshipful Master 14 times, you know,
true story. I mean, yeah. I got into the fraternity oh, let's see, right around 22 years old, went into the East by 26, stayed there until I was almost 40.
Yeah.
Did want to bring it back to CWH, See Schism by Rick Berman. One of the best histories of the origins of our split with the moderns. Yeah. So really, really great text.
And what kind of Mason is Rick Berman? Do we know?
I believe he's a modern.
Modern.
Yep.
I think so.
Wow.
I mean, so it is from...
Would love to sit in mods with him, but, you know.
His point of view, but...
Yeah, we're not allowed... So, I mean, just by edict in my lodge, we're not even allowed to have Couture Coronati Lodge type minutes or anything sitting, you know. And they keep their coffers tight. They only allow people to subscribe to that research lodge if you have a dues card from the moderns. So it's pretty wild.
It would be nice if we could see what they're doing and see what's going on. And, you know, it's been so long.
Now remind me how recognition works today, depending on some of the where you guys have traveled, because I know recognition can get tricky, plural membership can get tricky. What are some of the obstacles you faced because of this melting pot of Freemasonry that we're in?
So, you know, going back to how centralized the moderns tend to be, there's much better communication across the grand jurisdictions of the moderns. Grand Lodges in general. And so they're much more closely and tight-knit. Whereas with the ancients, look, where our numbers are far lower and it's a bit of the wild, wild west. And so there are some things we can get away with.
Yeah, like we can have websites that still look like they're from GeoCities. And, you know, moderns, they got a polished website. It's snappy. They got this weird Be a Freemason campaign thing. We don't have that. We can't afford that.
You know? Yeah, I think they did put the wrong state on a couple of the websites, but
it's true. They did do that. Somebody had asked, do we consider moderns clandestine or just irregular? I think, in terms of that question, it's really kind of jurisdictional in terms of what people say in an uneducated way. You'll hear it all day long that they're clandestine. But in fact, they're not clandestine or irregular. The ancients have issued almost edicts in every state stating that aside from the fact that they are quote-unquote moderns, they are Freemasons. We're not allowed to sit in a lodge with them. There are states like in New York and California, more of your sort of cosmopolitan mixing, DC area. You'll see ancients and moderns working together for certain charitable organizations or,
They'll do marches, on like Independence Day. They'll march.
Combined scholarship programs. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I do feel for the brothers that kind of like live like on a state line, right? Because, if you can't visit the next town over because of a variety of different, just a whole plethora of lodges, right? That kind of limit your ability to practice your fraternalism.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why, frankly, at least for the ancients, internet masonry has really taken off because we have such low numbers and such vast distance geographically between lodges that really, we get together for the degrees. The degrees really are sacred and beautiful. But a lot of even the lodge business, like, we conduct that online and try to get through that as quickly as possible so that we can actually focus on bettering ourselves through education and otherwise.
Well, could that be why we've not grown as much as the moderns, right? Because I talked to your brother. He was a modern and he left and then he joined an ancients lodge. And he's like a super, super amazing brother, and everybody likes to hang out with him. His name is Don. And yeah, and he was telling us a story where back in the day, this is before my time, the moderns every couple of years would have what's called a festival. And they would get a whole bunch of people and they would make you a master mason all in one day. And I was like, what is that all about? Like, we, you know, we're very one at a time and it's a laborious process. And that's probably why our growth is so slow. But
true.
Yeah, they would have thousands of people and make them all master masons in one day. And I thought that was amazing. I've never heard of something like that before.
Yeah, we're not willing to bend on that for sure.
I don't even know how it would work.
Yeah. You
know?
But there's no way you can comprehend what. Yeah, that's just it's a bizarre thing. And I think that's just one more thing that has added to the kindling of this, you know, fire that John, you mentioned earlier, you know, and Jason, you had said, you know, we're closer to admitting women in ancient lodge masonry than we are at coming together with the moderns. I mean, there are several masons in high positions within the ancient fraternity of masons, and they've said as much as that. The moderns and this idea of one day conferrals is, you know, borderline what they might consider as irregular masonry.
Well, and to that point too, I had a great point and it just completely left me. Dang it. So here we go. When it comes to membership numbers, the moderns are more concerned with numbers.
True.
Obviously. But, you know, I think one of the reasons why there's such a reticence to integrate the ancients and the moderns is I think we each have our own respective histories, our own respective traditions. And I think in large part, you know, the ancients, since we're such a smaller organization, I think there's a big concern that if we were to integrate into the moderns, you know, the ancients' history and traditions and culture and identity would just kind of disappear.
But it would. I mean, that's what everybody was. And I know John has done a lot of research into this. He's a super big research nerd and, you know, for the ancients lodges. And, I think that was one of the big sticking points why they didn't come together, you know, 200 years ago. Right.
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you, John. Well researched answer
confirmed.
Oh, like if y'all are Freemasons, you should know this stuff, right? There's you know, there's so many different Wikipedias for Masonic Wikipedias that have all these answers. Cernot Masonry, yeah, that was
there are a lot of viewers who are not Freemasons because they see what a disorganized mess Freemasonry is.
Yes, especially in the really, don't blame them.
Yes. Cernotism certainly does still exist. There was some contention initially in the upper east coast of the United States, and I mean, essentially, the modern tried to shut them down, right?
Well, which is interesting because related to that, if you know your history of Cernotism, this question I'm struggling with because I'm not sure what the difference between Scottish Rite Southern jurisdiction and Northern jurisdiction is.
Yeah, what is that? That's, I mean, you have a Scottish Rite in each state, at least in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, so like RJ, I remember he said he was going to do a program at his Scottish Rite Valley, and I was like, "That's nice, I can't go because you know I'm a member of my Scottish Rite Valley."
Right.
So each state has multiple valleys, right? Right.
Well, you have a valley aligned to a corresponding Grand Lodge
because Grand Lodge,
The Grand Lodge is the one that you know empowers that body to work as an independent body underneath of it.
Yeah, and it's really fragmented and each one is exactly different. Like I know I went to another ancients lodge and I met a brother who was a member of his Scottish Rite in his state, and he said all of their degrees are astronaut degrees, so like 1960s astronaut
interesting
kind of vibe. I'm like, that's weird and cool, I guess. Yeah. So.
Oh, is that the Lodge of Tranquility?
Yeah, that, I think you're right. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, it's cool, but
different. Yeah,
different.
Not Jason's, I just don't know. I just don't know what any of that would have to do with ancient masonry continuing with, you know, I guess the centralized theme that, yes, our rituals are insanely different, you know, much like kind of happened over in Scotland, you know, Grand Lodge and moderns tried to say, hey, you gotta, you know, get everything straightened out. And they said, nah, we've been older than you. And we kind of followed suit. So we've got all these various rituals, but continuing in the Scottish Rite, you know, you think that everything's got to tie back to either a Noahide or a Hiramic legend, and it doesn't. But that's not to say that I suppose the timeless lessons couldn't be repackaged. It just would be a little jarring, I suppose.
Sun card, which side can I get to start my Harry Potter Affinity Lodge? You're going to want to go to the moderns.
For sure. Yes.
And to Mike's point about antediluvian, you know, degrees, there was a, you know, a Noahite third degree practice in, you know, early craft masonry in the early 1700s. But largely given that Freemasonry is so fragmented, you know, those rituals really have been lost, and just, you know, we have just a couple, you know, kind of bigger redundant appendant bodies.
Well, to your point, like most of our various Grand Lodges, like the record keeping is awful because it's so hard to keep track of things like that.
You guys remember there was that really inconsequential Mason. He was I believe he was in the moderns, Albert Mackey, right?
Sounds familiar.
And he tried, I remember it was in the 19th century. He was like, hey, why don't we just come up with some landmarks that we can all adhere to? And I remember everybody was like, hell no, we're not doing that. That's stupid. And
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Right. Well,
yeah,
the big contention was that for a progressive institution, he would state something as bold as, you can't change these
fixed. Yeah.
And that is, you know, antithetical to Masonry in the sense that it prevents, progressivism and, assumes that we are somehow the ebb of human understanding, which, obviously we know isn't the case.
Establishing a standardized structure inherently infringes on the rights of the lodges, especially in the ancients, to practice masonry the way you know their respective grand jurisdictions want to practice.
Adam B says Order of the Eastern Ancient Star or Modern Star. So just to let you know,
what is that?
The Eastern Star, well, it is a modern institution. I'm sorry, it is not a modern institution.
Right.
Because the moderns are primarily having this association with the United Kingdom, the Grand Lodge over there really doesn't, they label them clandestine. I see little pockets of these Eastern stars that you're mentioning. It's like kind of like.
Were they started by the finger guy?
The finger guy. That's right. Yeah he tried. And, you know, they're very few and in between, like, Order of the Grange, I think, or the Grove, or things of that nature.
Largely today, it's seen as very misogynist, given that women can be Freemasons in their own right.
Yeah.
You know, given all of the ways that we have to be Freemasons.
Yeah.
So it's almost, you know, why would someone want to go to an organization where they're treated as a second class citizen.
So last
in the group.
So last question for you guys, looking forward, what do you see as like the future of, you know, this masonry, this that we have today, And I'll start because I crunched the numbers, at least on the ancient side. And as I said in an earlier episode, 2028, we're done, right? So we've really only got four more years at the path we're on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I heard there was going to be a conference maybe in a year or two. Some of the ancients, Grand Lodges, were going to get together and form like a regional one, like the Northeast,
that would make sense.
Yeah. Mid-Atlantic and the Midwest. And, you know, it's be interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, I mean, because we're now just like throwing spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks to keep this institution going.
Well, John, I take huge issue with that.
That's fair.
We're already so small, speaking from an ancient's point of view, we're already so small that, you know, our we are not seeing the big, you know, demits that I think the moderns are seeing based on, you know, their one day institutions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within the ancients, we're much smaller, but we're much tighter knit. And so we have much more longevity in our, you know, again, anecdotally from different grand jurisdictions, you know, we have much more longevity just because I think people choose ancient masonry as a way for them to really be fulfilled on a spiritual level. And I think we do that very well.
Can't argue that. I mean, the fact that we don't proselytize or have a set type of denomination within lodges. Although, you know, Joe, you did mention there was a non-denominational lodge that opened up around you, and that's kind of wonky. It seems like I wouldn't be surprised if someone, you know, maybe like a district deputy equivalent in that modern system comes to them and says, you need to straighten this out or we're going to pull your charter. I mean, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, agreed.
So, Mike, the ancient Egyptian Arabic Order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine. If you're talking about the Shriners, they've never been a part of Masonry. Yeah. They grew up as a separate institution focused
on... Not connected to Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Very successful. Right. One of the biggest charities in the world. They have hospitals in every state, probably like three or four in every state.
Mm-hmm. And they do amazing charitable work.
They've unified with the St. Jude hospitals as well, who was... St. Jude is the organization that is somewhat tied to ancient masonry, in that the founder of St. Jude's was a Mason. And so I guess, but he was a member out in California, ancient lodge. And, but they're much smaller than Shriners, which I think is interesting. I don't know much about them.
Nice. All right. I think we're at that time where we can
wrap up the scene and now come back to the main branch of the timeline.
And
what happened?
What happened? Where was I just now?
Who's Sherry O'Terry?
And so as we close the episode, you know, the final question for all of you is, what was exploring that alternate timeline like?
Sad,
depressing.
It's kind of like when somebody says, just start writing and to be cathartic, and then like everything just negative starts pouring out of you, and you're like,
oh gosh.
Well, here's reading the paper.
It's the email that you write but then delete instead of sending.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's what's funny is like getting super nerdy here. I grew up on the What If comics. Like before it was a TV show on Disney Plus. It was and those are some of my favorite comics because they went completely batshit and off the rails. Like, what if this did this? It's like, no, that would never happen. And like the endings were always insanity, like you'd be sad or pissed but then you were like, thank God it's an alternate reality. Yes. And doesn't ruin the rest of my nerddom. But
RJ, yeah, make this happen.
Oh,
what's that?
We need the TARDIS sound effects.
Oh, okay. I will. Yeah, it'll happen. What you mentioned, Joe, my favorite What If comic I remember I had strep throat. My mom took me to the Navy base, and I was in the small like commissary that was inside the base, and it had some comic books, and I picked up What If Captain America had led a team of super soldiers in World War II. And it's Captain America and the super soldiers hoisting the flag up.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And that was like, what is this? That was my intro to What If, and I've been hooked on those What Ifs ever since.
Yeah, they were phenomenal.
I think it's a great thought exercise.
Right. Jason, you'll start the final thoughts. Go with it.
It's a great thought exercise to better understand the consequences of context and history. Yeah, some of it is a little silly. All of it is extrapolations from incomplete data. And none of us, you know, are professional forecasters. However, you know, it gives us insight into, frankly, I think it gives us a little bit of a peek into our future. You know, the whole we're not dying, we're refining, even though the data don't support that. You know, I see, you know, the future of masonry over the next, yeah. I said the data don't support it. I'm caveating. I'm just summarily dismissing it.
As you wish.
And letting you know.
As you wish.
I can use whatever I want as long as I make my assertions and my assumptions known. Fair point. You can do your own research and throw out my argument based on those if you want. Where was I?
I don't know.
So at the end of the day, I think, you know, this exercise gives us a little bit of a taste into what Freemasonry in the future might look like. Smaller, more disparate, more tightly knit groups of people, as opposed to just a bigger organization. And, you know, you may have people who show up for the self-improvement much more than the titles or being a leader or, you know, being seen out in public. And I think there are nuggets of really, really great things in a future that has a bit of a smaller, more tight-knit masonry.
Love it. Joe, what were your thoughts on
this? Yeah, no, my thought stands. It was sad, right? Just hypothesizing all the little fragmented bits of masonry that we would have. Which I think we were, I mean, as much as we joked, I think we were a little spot on. You know, there'd be lodges in the same town that would be dilapidated and sad, and nobody be going to them anyway, right? Because you'd have that consistent malaise that we have now when it comes to both masonry and self-improving yourself or self-improvement. But it would just be, you know, we definitely wouldn't have gotten the national treasures and the Da Vinci codes and, true, you know, things like that as a result, because it wouldn't have had such an impact in society the way it used to. Yeah, like I said, it was a little sad thinking that it was much more fragmented and less united and less universal from the standpoint that, you know, I wouldn't know that RJ was a Mason, or maybe that you guys weren't Masons, and, you know, that kind of thing. But, I mean, the one thing that I thought was awesome was when Jason talked about internet masonry. I'm sure that would have picked up a lot quicker, than the little pockets that it did today, followed by a big boom in, you know, post COVID. You know, I think that would have been more impactful, but again, it was weird, a little sad, a little bittersweet, but, yeah, I'm glad it was an alternate reality.
All right. Good stuff. RJ.
Look, man, I think it was a fun thought experiment. It was cathartic. I will admit there were parts in there where it was very difficult not to kind of throw shade and mask it as something else.
I caught a few subtle things you did, RJ.
you guys too.
I love it.
But the thing that I think is important about this conversation is, aside from the fact that we're exploring this fictitious universe, the things that we're bringing up are still very real issues in some way, the way they're, whether we see class warfare in lodges or not, we certainly do. I mean, let's be honest, there are some lodges out there that do operate that way. We talked about women in masonry. We talked about, Christian only type masonry. Like, these are all issues that we face. And in this alternate reality, we look at it and we were able to, under the guise of a story, to address them in a way that perhaps was more freeing than we could do even on this podcast with a disclaimer. You know what I mean? And so I just felt it was very cathartic to be able to talk about it and in the same respect, have a lot of fun and kind of just shoot from the hip and in the experience. I mean, the combined Masonic experience with the four of us, not to mention everybody in the chat asking questions about this, it makes for an insane amount of knowledge and questions that we can ask and kind of explore. So mm-hmm. I'm like Joe. I'm super excited. This isn't the way Masonry is. And it's nice to return to our own timeline.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, for me, everything you guys said, and I think it's good because we were able to pull threads through commentary that is not so much satire, but it is a deconstruction. It's a way of thinking about it. And one thing that I also enjoyed as part of this thought experiment, thinking through and doing some research for the show, would be to take a historical event that didn't happen or the opposite happened, and then see what the butterfly effect is, right? What happens over generations because of one choice and how divergent something can go. So, there's lots of different paths, right? We're writing a different future, but again, it's based off of actual things that could happen. So that was fun just to pull that thread of a timeline and see what would happen. So with that was fun. We're actually going to continue this series. We have at least three more episodes, maybe more if this is good. And we are going to keep that a surprise until next week, like always. So thank you all very much for watching. See you next week, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.
What if I don't want to keep searching for more light?
What if? What if? What if? What if? What if?